calling me Larry.
Hello, Larry.
Hats off to Larry.
Larry. Fucking Larry.
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 Larry. Larry, get into bed now.
Is there no sweeter sound than that of your own name buried in cheers and applause? Nope. Welcome, everyone. Now, this episode has been kind of simmering on the back burner of my mind for quite a while, and a terrific Facebook post. Yes, that's right. This show has several Facebook pages. Just pop that Larry Show in Zuckerberg's search bar and join all three of them. This fascinating post from a listener named Patrick Boynton really jump-started this episode, and here's what he had to say. I feel like so many things could be fixed if we knew what the killer line was to say at the right time. Whoever writes the book of, quote, when this bullshit thing happens, at work, slash, with your significant other, slash, with your family, slash, whatever, just say this, unquote. And if that book actually works, the author will never have to work another day in his life. Larry, you've had a lot of this kind of thing on the show. Million Dollar Idea, do it up. Well, Patrick, thanks for the post. The book you envision has already been written, sort of. It's called Life Scripts: What to Say to Get What You Want in Life's Toughest Situations. The author is Stephen Pollan, someone I've met a couple times, and he's a nice guy and a very sharp dude. Although he's written several bestsellers, he's probably most famous for being the father-in-law of Marty McFly. Says a lot about our celebrity-obsessed culture, doesn't it? The book is a terrific resource for anyone in business. He covers topics like how to ask for a raise or promotion, criticize somebody's work, or how to fire somebody, things like that. And his advice is all solid and workable. But if you read it, and I did when it was published in 2004, unless you have some special powers, you certainly can't memorize it, which would be great. It's almost like writing Chinese. You have to learn thousands of characters to represent words instead of 26 little letters that can be used to spell infinite words. Life Scripts is mostly written about handling situations in which we can choose the time and place of the confrontation. But how often does that happen? Usually, the situations where we want the killer line or snappy comeback are a surprise or even an ambush. The other person has been plotting and waiting for a time to waylay you with their well-rehearsed invective. But to Patrick's point and post, if you think about it, we all go through life facing new situations and new people for which we may be inexperienced and unprepared. And it's not only the workplace where we need life scripts, it's everywhere, isn't it? We face one confrontation after another, and most times the person we face is part of some organization or institution, and that person plays the game day in, day out, and has training and very often a selection of scripts written for them to enable them to get the better of us. What do I mean? How about getting stopped by a cop? Unless we're driving like a maniac, do we ever expect it? No. So he's got the element of surprise going for him. He's also got lethal weapons and a radio and the limitless power of the state behind him. And if he so chooses, he can fuck up your life or maybe even take your life. Now, what recourse do you have? As we see more and more often, virtually none. In recent times, we've witnessed executions on video of people in hallways and answering the front door with zero accountability. I'll get deeper into that subject in another episode, but for now, we're focusing on non-lethal confrontations. So you don't know why he stopped you until you roll down the window, and he does not have to tell you why he stopped you, even after you've handed him your license and Reggie. That's right, he is under no legal obligation to tell you why he stopped you until you meet him in court, where you damn well better have the best lawyer you can possibly afford. And even if said attorney, like Dojo co-counsel Nick the Knife Riquita, helps you beat the charge, you still gotta pay him. So what you say and do matters more than we can possibly imagine. I'll circle back to the stop by a cop scenario a little later in the show. But first, let's get back to Patrick's insightful post. He's looking for killer lines. Here's a few from famous movies.
You want me to hold a chicken, huh?
I want you to hold it between your knees.
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
How do you write women so well?
I think of a man, and I take away reason and accountability.
Where shall I go? What shall I do?
Frankly, my dear, I don't give a damn.
That's a hip shot selection I found without a lot of digging. I know I've probably heard better, but if you really think about it, how often does anybody come up with that killer line in real life? Or even do we hear someone else deliver a line off the cuff, kerpow? Answer, rarely. Ad libs, good ones anyway, are very uncommon. And the killer lines we hear and see in movies are labored over and polished by writers, sometimes teams of writers. But when we watch these things, it looks so easy. And when do we most need that killer line? Usually when we're in some kind of stressful situation. And when we're stressed, we're not thinking about being clever. If smart, we should be thinking about either winning the confrontation or extracting ourselves from the situation until we're better prepared to deal. Frequently, we do conjure that killer line, but when it's too late, minutes or hours or days later. Unlike revenge, the snappy comeback or killer line must be delivered immediately and piping hot. As someone mentioned later on in that Facebook thread, the French have a phrase for it, and that phrase is l'esprit de l'escalier, the literal translation of which is staircase wit. And isn't that where we muster some of our best killer lines? Allegedly, the phrase was born of an incident where a statesman was at some fancy dinner and was dealt a comment so repugnant, so unexpected and insulting that he said, quote, "A sensitive man such as myself, overwhelmed by the argument leveled against him, becomes confused and can only think clearly again when he finds himself at the bottom of the stairs." Ah, those French, besides fielding some of the pointiest women on earth and the best cuisine to eat while ogling them, they really have a pretty rich language. For more of my Francophile musings, check out my bonus episode number 9 and discover the 5 secrets of a fun life, French style. You'll love it.
At Patreon, but of course.
Now, if we were to shift these verbal barbs and snappy rejoinders to the physical realm, we'd be talking about how to deal with a sucker punch. Sucker punches are poorly named. They sort of imply that the guy getting punched is a sucker when in fact he may be quite formidable, like, say, Jean-Claude Van Damme, the muscles from Brussels. His encounter with Hell's Angel Chuck Zito at a New York strip joint many years ago is the stuff of legend and a classic case of he said, he said. Van Damme says he was sucker punched and Zito claims otherwise, but anybody, regardless of expertise, can be decked by ambush. And with verbal jousting, it's no different. No one can possibly be prepared with the perfect comeback for any insult or encounter at any time. And we'll look at perceived masters and think, why can't we be like that? Really talented comedians may seem to be adept at putting down hecklers, but in fact, most have arsenals of stock lines to neutralize them. Rodney Dangerfield once told a heckler,
"Hey buddy, save your breath. You'll need it later for your inflatable date."
Another great one is, "Hey man, why do you want my job? Do I go where you work and take the mop out of your hands?" But let's remember, while the rest of us do whatever job we're doing to pay the bills, memorizing killer lines is a comic's job. And they rarely ever ad-lib. People used to think Robin Williams was riffing. He was not. He just had a massive stockpile of material memorized he could access instantly. Bob Hope had a joke file at his mansion which reputedly held close to 1 million jokes. Comedians pay people for jokes all the time, and when hecklers strike, professional comics have some advantages you don't have. One, an audience that already likes them and paid to see and hear them, not the fucking heckler. So they've got backup. They also have stage lights and a microphone, so they win most every encounter with hecklers. Some time back, I was at the Improv in Los Angeles at a front row table, and one of the comics in the lineup was Chelsea Handler. About 10 minutes into her act, she decides to unload on me and my friend. So she had a couple of laughs at our expense, and I didn't care. I thought it was funny. But then about 10 minutes later, she circled back to me for another shot. When I dropped a killer comeback on her, she was totally flummoxed. I got a big laugh, and she was thrown. She made a huge mistake. She gave me the time to come up with my l'esprit de l'escalier. More seasoned comics know better than to fuck with the audience and never the same guy twice. Unless it's a Don Rickles-style act where the audience hopes to get picked on. So instead of trying to memorize and stockpile lines and scripts for every encounter, maybe we should try to develop some reflexive responses, responses of a general nature to verbal confrontations that are applicable to a wide range of situations. If it's at work, the best responses are ones that stall. Your boss walks up to you and says he's thinking of changing the reporting structure or your responsibilities or schedule. Now, if it's fait accompli, he's just telling you how it is and your response is moot. But maybe he wants to see how much bullshit he can foist upon you. A trial balloon, which is sometimes the case. If so, you want to buy time so you can come back with an answer that's your preference, but so worded as to make him feel like you're on board with his scheme, whatever it is. So the comeback to ambush ideas from the boss is, hey, what an intriguing idea. Intriguing is a favorite weasel word around Hollywood. Doesn't mean a fucking thing. Also, with this all-purpose exclamation, you haven't said it's intriguing to you. You probably think it sucks. You might be intrigued by the carbuncle oozing pus on the back of the guy's neck in front of you at the movies, but you sure as hell don't want to get involved with it. Intriguing is noncommittal, so say it. Then pour some flattery over his head. You know, that new schedule or workflow or whatever the fuck it is he's contemplating is really fresh, and you'd like to give it the thought and consideration it deserves. And can you circle back on it with him in a couple of days? 2 days is always a better stall interval than one. It usually takes me a day just to cool off from the brink of homicide and start thinking rationally. Once you do, you can concoct a response that endorses the part of his idiotic plan that's least offensive to you, and then distort the remainder of his harebrained scheme to something more acceptable to you. Another way to rewire yourself to sidestep verbal sucker punches is to answer the question with a question. From the time we are children, we are hardwired by parents and teachers and coaches and authority figures to answer questions with a statement. In an adversarial conversation, this nearly guarantees an L on your scorecard. How do we undo decades of habitual answering and retrain ourselves to ask questions? Practice. Do it with the cashier at the supermarket, your bartender, waiter, whoever it is. Get in the habit of answering questions with questions. Because in any verbal exchange, other than, say, a doctor trying to diagnose you, the person asking the questions is the one in control. They are trying to exert power over you. And if you sit there answering them, you are losing. One of the best reflexive responses is, why do you ask? That usually throws them. If they are beneath you with zero authority over you, ask, what's it to you? That's generally a prelude to a punch, and there's nothing wrong with that. Now, in case of the boss, you don't want to come off snotty or hostile. So a great envelope in which to wrap the sidestep question is playing dumb. Hey, boss, I'm not sure I understand fully. Can you run that by me again? Very often you'll get a different playback on Rewind, which gives you the chance to further cloud and obfuscate by comparing and contrasting his two conflicting questions in an attempt to discern the correct one. This buys you more time. One of the greatest snappy comeback guys was the bearded dude from Galilee. Everywhere he went, he left a trail of Chelsea handlers sputtering incoherently. And when he didn't have a killer line to deliver or a question to ask, he used perhaps the single most powerful weapon in all of communication. Silence. That's right. Read those Gospels and see how often when some shitbag is trying to goad him into a fight or extract some prosecutable quotation from him, he just dummies up. Unless someone has extreme power over you, you don't have to say a fucking thing. Silence is golden, and often it will frustrate the shit out of the opposition. Which brings me around to the stopped by a cop scenario I mentioned at the top of the show. You have the right to remain silent. That doesn't mean you play deaf mute when some cop pulls you over. However, it has been proven again and again that the less you say, the better off you are. And that includes the now popular, am I being detained? Or references to sovereign citizenry. Unless you are some pointy bikini model and the cop is straight and you think you can cry your way out of the ticket, which still happens all the time. In fact, if you're reasonably sexy, you can cry your way out of murdering a 2-year-old. Just ask Casey Anthony. But if you're not remotely pointy or hot, shut the fuck up. My pal Tony Spumante knows this, as does most of his organization associates. Sometimes visual aids imprint on our memory better than words. So the next time you are stopped by police, imagine you've just had oral surgery and even the slightest movement of your jaw will split your skull with pain. That will help you keep your mouth shut. And you can nod and shrug as much as possible and make your encounter with him or her as brief as possible. Now, I want to talk about another situation. It's a question I was asked by a great dude. He was one of my earliest listeners and a take-no-shit guy for sure. I'm not going to reveal his actual name, but typical of listeners of this show, he asked me to share his problem with all of you, perhaps that his pain might help others. So I'm just going to call him Frank, and here's what's bugging him. He says, Larry, I have a problem I was wondering you might be able to help. My longtime girlfriend and the mother of my son is up to nefarious deeds. A while ago, she got a little too close to a coworker, and there had been a social media relationship. I really didn't like that it was going on, but I let it slide because I've had flirty friends in the past. To cut a long story short, a lot of things kept happening that started to be way too suspicious. Ultimately, she lied about going to a friend's house for the night and instead stayed at his. She didn't realize that I had already saved her to my Google Maps so I could see where she was. She swore that she didn't sleep with him, and I believed her. I asked after that for her to stop what she was doing, but rather than stop, she started locking her phone, blocking me on Google, and changing all her passwords. I tried everything I could think of, arguing, apologizing, giving her ultimatums, having all the housework done with dinner waiting on the table, and all the privacy she wanted.
Last night she left her phone on without the lock, so I checked the private conversation with the other guy and read some disturbing messages alluding to the two of them sleeping together and her confessing how much she wanted to be with him. When I brought this up, she denied everything. Still, at this point, I'm just feeling crushed, like I've got no fight left. It sucks because I want to give her another chance, but this has been going on for a while and has only gotten worse. I don't know if she's capable of admitting fault or even apologizing, but if I leave her, I'll be financially ruined since all of our acquired debt is in my name. I've made a lot of mistakes, so I don't want to make another. Should I keep at it or just call it what it is? Frank, in the year I've been doing this show, this is by far the toughest question I've been asked. First, given the amount of time you've lived with her, she may qualify as a common law wife, not merely your girlfriend. But either way, the real crux of the matter is, she is the mother of your son. Of course, as long as you and she and your son draw breath, you are forever linked. No divorce or span of time or distance can ever change that. And now, you've established that she is not merely unfaithful, but also an adept liar. In fact, infidelity is really just another form of lying, and it hurts on so many levels. She's cheated on you, plus she thinks you're dumb enough not to notice and to believe her when she denies it. It's like a combination punch followed by a kick in the balls. But you are not alone. Hundreds of millions, probably billions, of guys have been exactly where you are. People cheat. Women cheat, and they're far, far better at deception than men. So the first thing you need to do is cut yourself some slack. Her decision to cheat is on her, not you. Now, if she were not the mother of your son, I'd urge you to dump her, regardless of the financial consequences, because over time, living with someone who has betrayed you and cut you so deeply will fuck you up. Can you forgive? Maybe, but not if her behavior continues. Only Jesus has that level of forgiveness. So, you're in a very tough situation surrounded by many pitfalls that could lead to disaster, but most important is the well-being of your kid. What to do? Frank, imagine if you were to come home one day and find a 600-pound Bengal tiger in your home. Would you kick him in the face and tell him to scram? You could go for your gun, but even at close range, you might not deliver a kill shot before he tears your head off. So your best play would be the nice kitty one. Maybe ease over to the fridge and offer him some salami or cheese sticks. And while he's busy eating, try to sneak out of the house and come up with a plan. Your girlfriend may have the destructive power of that tiger. So don't do anything sudden or rash or different or even raise your voice. First, get to an attorney and discern just how much financial damage she can do. See how much leverage she might have in a custody battle for your son. Use this time to quietly take inventory of your options and sketch out a rough plan for how to disconnect from her. You never really will, but maybe you can get it to a tolerable level. As you do this, maintain your normal routine and concentration on caring for yourself and your son. If you don't hit the gym, get to one and punch this shit out of a heavy bag. You're going to need a regular outlet for your very justifiable rage. And don't forget to tape your hands first. If you find you are boxed in every way, think outside of the box. Maybe she can find lodgings elsewhere, and you can get yourself a girlfriend, but not a live-in one, not with your son at home. That would certainly ease some pressure and help repair your ego, which is doubtless severely bruised. You may just have to hang on, as is, for a while. But that doesn't mean you have to take any shit. In many relationships, there is an uneven balance of power. In many cultures, if both parties are agreeable, that works pretty well. Sometimes it doesn't. but it appears that for now, she has the upper hand. Making her dinner and cleaning the house won't change her mind about her boyfriend, but it will eat away at you when your kindness is not returned. If you clean the house, do it for you and your son, not as a peace offering to her. You are the aggrieved party here, Frank. If there's an ass to be kissed, it should be yours. Betrayal is usually the death knell for a relationship, but in rare instances, people can make amends. Maybe she will over time. Regardless, keep the focus of your life on you and your son until your situation with her is resolved, one way or the other. I wish you well, my friend. Hey everybody, thanks for hanging with me once again here at the Take No Shit Dojo. Write to me anytime at thatlarryshow@gmail.com or leave a voicemail for me at 302-71-LARRY. If you're listening to this on iTunes and like what you hear, leave us a 5-star review. If you really like what you hear, go to patreon.com/thatlarryshow and join the dojo for bonus episodes, signed books, and custom recordings from yours truly. And for musings and pictures and more of everything, slide over to thatlarryshow.com and click the subscribe by email button. That way you'll never miss a thing. My friends, remember, whether you're searching for that killer comeback or the true blue chick who'll never stab you in the back, always hang tough and never let anything or anyone crush you, not even for a moment. Self-mastery is the key to invincibility. I'll see you next Tuesday, right here at the crossroads of madness and enlightenment. And until that time, take no shit.